supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. So, King Solomon, Jesus, the Buddha, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, and my grandfather. They all had wisdom. But what do all these people have in common, and why are we drawn to their thinking? Moreover, are we drawn to their thinking, or is it something about their humanity that we're drawn to? Today we're going to be talking about wisdom and the aging brain, why some of us have it, others of us don't. And we've gathered several experts together from different areas of who have different areas of expertise to share their own wisdom on this topic. Here with me in the studio is Geraldine Grossman, psychologist, founding member of the Family Institute of Philadelphia, my teacher back then, my mentor then and now. Jerry, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Joining us on the phone is Dr. Elkanan Goldberg. He's a clinical professor of neurology at NYU School of Medicine, and his most recent book is The Wisdom Paradox. Elkanan, welcome to the show.
My pleasure.
And returning to the show is our old friend Stephen Post. He's a professor of medicine, also the founding director of the Center for Medical Humanities at Stony Brook. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Dan. It's so good to be with you.
And later on, we're going to hear from Ursula Stauninger. She's the director of the Columbia Aging Center. And we'd also like to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. Who have been the sources of wisdom in your life, and why? What do you consider wise about what they've given you? We'd love to hear from you. 888-477-9499. Elkanan, you were quoted in a recent New York Times article that began by defining wisdom as maintaining positive well-being and kindness in the face of challenges, including physical decline and facing death. Would you agree with that?
Well, wisdom is such a multifaceted concept. I think that this captured one of these many facets, and probably not all of them.
Jerry, how about you? What's your take on this New York Times article?
I didn't read the whole article, but I think being positive is great, but I also think we have to accept some of the negatives and not so positive things in order to stay positive and be realistic.
Stephen, the field of positive psychology defines wisdom as the coordination of knowledge and experience for the sole purpose of improving well-being. But whose well-being, I wonder?
Well, the well-being of others, but also of self. It works both ways. There's no wisdom without experience, and we sometimes have to acknowledge that hard lessons are learned hard, but we can harvest what we learn for others, and we can also cultivate it in our own hearts as a source of resilience and growth.
We can harvest what we learn for others, and that sure sounds like wisdom. Elkanan, let me turn to you. Is that a choice, or is it more complex than that?
Well, are you asking whether becoming or not becoming wise is a matter of choice? Probably not.
Uh-huh.
It's a matter of certain abilities combined with certain experiences and, I guess, with a certain frame of mind.
Stephen, I want to turn back to you, and I want to talk about scriptures with you. I have a hunch you're comfortable with that.
Yes, I am, Dan.
Okay, so we'll start with Buddhist scriptures. And they say a wise person does actions that are unpleasant to do but give good results, and doesn't do actions that are pleasant but give bad results. In both the Quran and Old Testament, wisdom is considered one of the highest virtues, right there along with justice. And according to many Christian beliefs, wisdom is one of the seven gifts of the Holy Spirit. So what's religion telling us here about wisdom?
In the Hebrew tradition, there is the Council of Elders. These are people who are a little on the gray side, and who are, I think, beyond ambition. They are beyond the thrill of narcissism. Maybe they're looking a little more retrospectively at their own journey in life, and they've come to a point of balance with the universe, with their own journeys, so that they can bequeath to the world insights that are really entirely selfless, that just really come from often the school of hard knocks, although I suppose we also learn from the mistakes of others. But like I say, in my own life experience, hard lessons are learned hard, and there's no other way.
Yeah, my kids didn't learn a damn thing from my mistakes. Elkanah, tell me what you're hearing from all the scriptures. What's the message?
The message is that indeed wisdom is a very, very multifaceted construct which means different things to different people, and all these the attempts at formulating it, which we just engaged in, each of them captures one of these facets, and the fact that they are so non-overlapping speaks to the fact that it is a very rich and very multifaceted construct. Now, as a cognitive neuroscientist, I was concerned with only one or maybe even a few facets of this rich construct, sort of leaving other facets to others. And so I'm very curious to hear what my partners in this enterprise have to say.
I'll tell you what, speaking of that facet you're interested in, I want to, for all of us, to listen to my interview with psychologist Dr. Ursula Stauninger. She's the director of the Columbia Aging Project. She's an internationally acknowledged aging researcher, and she worked on the Berlin Wisdom Project. This is a project that spanned several decades and sought to define and measure wisdom. For the project, Stauninger distinguished between personal and general wisdom. I asked her to explain.
Well, the difference is quite simple. General wisdom is used to refer to insight and judgment that is about life in general, to understanding life from an observer's perspective, whereas personal wisdom refers to our insights and judgments that concern our own life.
I'm having difficulty seeing where a person could have one and not the other. Could you help me?
Well, it's obviously they are related. However, just imagine a person who is very insightful about him or herself, however, has very little inclination to communicate with other people about difficult life issues. So that would be a person strong in personal wisdom, but basically indistinguishable with regard to general wisdom because the person doesn't make the effort to reach out or to become visible. And the other way around is easier. It's actually more often the case that some people reach some insight into life in general. However, not necessarily does that imply that they are wise about themselves. So let's go to the old and ancient history. One of the most often quoted cases when it comes to wise advice is Solomon from the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. And rumor has it that, yes, he made this very wise verdict that he is always quoted for, but when you look into his personal life, it's quite a turmoil.
Yeah, he was a mess.
Yes, exactly. So that's just two examples why we thought it would be useful to explore these two notions separately, not meaning that they are completely independent of each other, obviously.
So let's talk about these elements of wisdom. Can you define it? Is there a way?
Yeah, well, obviously it's a big, big challenge with a notion like wisdom, which is as old as humankind has been able to write things down. And so what we did when we started in the 80s, we went back to that old literature and first started with an overall definition that says that wisdom is deep knowledge and insight in difficult and uncertain matters of life. Now, from that general definition, then, we had to come up with quality criteria, because if we wanted to evaluate people with regard to their insight in these deep and existential issues of life, we needed to be able to say, okay, this insight is better than the other.
I want to back up just a minute. You talked about the existential qualities of wisdom, and when I think existential, of course, I think life and death, and that leads us to the population we're talking about, and that's aging. And the aging population is theoretically less able to deny death. They're more facile, theoretically, with these existential issues.
Yeah, they're closer to them. They're more exposed. But the research tells us, however, that not necessarily do we grow wiser as we grow older. It is not enough to just move through life and add years to our lives and to add wisdom to them. And the reason for that is that the moving along our timeline is not enough. We need to make sense of it, evaluate it, integrate it, put it in perspective. And actually what we found was that this last task in life, which Erik Erikson has described so beautifully in his juxtaposition of finding integrity in your life, mm-hmm. or actually finding despair because you cannot integrate your life as lived, is this last big task that we are facing as we approach our death.
Well, yeah, and, you know, that's kind of our task throughout life, you know, is to reframe and get perspective. None of what you're talking about says anything about cognitive decline, and that's the great fear of all of us as we age. I think that's pretty universal. Can we lose our memory, and can we still retain our wisdom?
Yeah, that will be very hard. It will be very hard to lose your memory and retain your insights into life, because we need our repository of experiences to find good solutions to present-day problems, which would then be called wise insights and judgments. So that would be very hard. However, what can be possible is a kind of wisdom which we can also observe in children. But to your larger question, you know, about cognitive decline, luckily, we do not need the perfect cognition to be wise. We just need a minimal operative capacity of our brain. And we actually have that to very late unless we undergo a pathological dementia process.
I would think the ability to retain curiosity mm-hmm. and kindness and compassion
yes. mm-hmm.
and love mm-hmm. is, you know, only very partially related to cognitive decline.
And exactly. And
those elements are what yes. people seek out in one another.
Yes. And in particular, the first one, the curiosity.
Yeah.
is very crucial, because wisdom is all about challenging oneself. And if we stop challenging what we have learned from the past, we will fall into being outdated. So this continued curiosity of what's coming up and about new people and new things is so crucial. If we stop moving out of our comfort zone, it's not good.
Ursula, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Well, I thank you. This was a wonderful conversation.
That was a conversation I recently had with Dr. Ursula Staudinger. She's the director of the Columbia Aging Process. Jerry, I want to turn to you. One of the good news and bad news about being here in the studio live is that I get to watch you shake your head. So You were shaking your head in agreement. I want to hear your take on what you were hearing.
Right. The thing that I agreed with most was the keeping up your curiosity. And I think a lot of that stems, if I go back and be more personal, because I'm a clinician and I don't really think as abstractly, but I go back to when I realized I couldn't be an expert. I didn't know anything, and I didn't know everything, and I found myself treating people and faking because I felt I had to know. And once I gave that up and realized I didn't have to know, I had to listen, I had to learn, I had to be curious, but I didn't have to know. So once I did that, it became so much easier because I learned from everybody else.
And then you approached everyone with curiosity. I mean, my mantra is the world will change when we approach everyone with a curious mind and an open heart. And
exactly.
That's a good therapist.
That's a good therapist. And also when you do that, you connect. And to me, connecting is such a big part of growing and learning.
Yeah, yeah. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Geraldine Grossman about wisdom. She's a psychologist, founding member of the Family Institute of Philadelphia. Stephen Post is a professor of medicine at Stony Brook, and his most recent book is The Hidden Gifts of Helping. And Dr. Elkanon Goldenberg's a clinical professor of neurology at NYU School of Medicine, and his most recent book is The Wisdom Paradox. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear from you about experiences of wisdom in your life. Who are the wise people in your life, and what makes them wise? 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Temple Beth Zion Beth Israel supports WHYY and announces its inaugural lecture on Jewish thought and psychoanalysis entitled Freud, Moses, and the Holocaust, Sunday, April 27th at 4 p.m. Noted historian and professor Dr. Eli Zaretsky will explore the relationship between Eastern European Jewish culture, the unconscious, the Holocaust, and the prevalence of Jewish psychiatrists and psychologists. Registration at bzbi.org and at jewishthoughtandpsychoanalysis.com.
Devereaux is a proud supporter of WHYY. For more than 100 years, Devereaux has provided care to individuals with developmental disabilities and mental and behavioral health disorders. Devereaux's work also includes its full continuum of autism-specific programming for individuals of all ages, including residential services, community-based group homes, employment training, and support and educational programs. For more information on Devereaux's autism-specific services, devereaux.org.
We're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about wisdom. What is it, and why are we so drawn to it? We're with Dr. Elkanon Goldberg, Dr. Stephen Post, and Geraldine Grossman about wisdom. And we're going to be talking about wisdom in the aging brain here. But I want to ask all three of you a question first. Why are we having this discussion in the first place? You know, why is wisdom so cherished and revealed? What's the big deal anyway? Isn't ignorance bliss? I'll turn to you, Elkanon.
We are all struck by the ability present in some people and absent in most to approach seemingly intractable problems, I mean problems broadly, not just scientific problems, but existential problems, any kind of problems, and finding solutions in a seemingly effortless, instantaneous fashion when it eludes everybody else. And I think that our fascination with this ability is at the root of our fascination with wisdom. We are trying to define wisdom. We cannot. Each of us is alluding to a certain aspect of the mind which we admire in other people and cherish in ourselves. Yeah. If we feel that we possess at least a grain of it, and the combination of these mysterious qualities is what we call wisdom, without fully understanding what it is.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm, and we'll flag this and come back to it. But my experience as a lowly clinician like Geraldine over there is that, you know, when the intellect fails, that there's an emotion underneath that or an experience that might shed some light on it. So is wisdom, when we're with a wise person, is it a sensation? And if I can be really reductionistic about this, is it when the parasympathetic system takes over and we say, ah, yeah, this is where I want to be? You know, I just wonder about that. Stephen, let me turn to you. Why what's the big deal with wisdom, really?
Well, you know, there's not too much wisdom in the world. You think about all the fragmentation of knowledge. Everybody knows some little fragment about something, and no one can pull it together into a whole. You think about the superficiality of a lot of intellectual life and all of what I like to call the hypercognitive values that sometimes, in fact, dismiss and diminish wisdom. So for me, you know, when I've been around wise people, and I can count on my fingers the three or four wisest people I've ever known, first of all, when I was with them, they loved me. I had a sense from their tone of voice, from their cadence, from their facial expression, just from the way they slowed down and got into the moment with me and reached my heart as well as my mind, that they loved me. Hmm. And the other thing was that they weren't trying to show off their own knowledge base. Oftentimes, they spoke with a certain kind of retrospective pain, and they could tell me where they might have taken a little different fork in the road. So it's all about experience, and it's about knowledge of, not just knowledge about, and it takes a kind of calm, quiet intimacy for people to really convey in that deeply generative sense pearls of wisdom that change and transform a life. And I can just remember every detail of some of the people who gave me that gift in the past. I can just remember where the light was shining through the windows and just how I felt and how it changed me.
All right, let me press you then. Now that you've been so generous to talk about yourself and your life, give us one example. Can you name a name, even a first name, and what happened in that interaction?
Well, back in my Cleveland days, I had the benefit of an incredible elder statesman of neurology, Joseph Michael Foley. He was a second-generation Irishman born and raised in Boston and went out to Case Western in the 1960s. He recruited me out there. He did take a liking to me. And I could sit with him and I could talk about so many of the challenges of adjusting to a medical school, the challenges of raising children, of having a son who for a while was in the NICU and not really being able to grapple with that very effectively. I just could sit with Joe Foley. I could drive with him in a car out to Mount Vernon, Ohio, to visit a geriatric psychiatric unit. And every moment, every hill we went over, and every valley, every peak, it was just Joe caring, and giving.
What was the age difference between you and Joe?
Well, Joe died 2 years ago. He was 96. Yeah. And so he definitely had 35 or 40 years on me.
Let's go to the phones. We've got a couple of lines open, but we've got a lot of callers who want to join the conversation. Let's start with Barb. Hi, Barb. You're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Dan. You know, you're plugging everybody else's book, but I'm reading The Wisdom We're Born With. And I absolutely believe that we are all born with a certain amount of wisdom that is either, beat out of us, or as a Catholic school child, kind of shunted in some way. But reading your book is helping me to go within, to find the wisdom within. And one of the other things I'm doing, I'm a personal historian. I absolutely have worked with a number of elders who have had this wisdom and those who have not. And I think it gets back to the point of continuing the curiosity throughout your life, mm-hmm. absolutely. And on a personal level, I am now, at 52 years old, writing my memoir and going back and finding those kernels and lessons and the wisdom throughout my life to be able to reflect on it, but also to leave to the next generation to talk about it before I leave the planet.
That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about generosity. And Barb, I will pay you that kickback for promoting my book that I promised before the show. Thanks so much, Barb. I do appreciate it. You know, Jerry, I'm thinking about what Barb just said about the purpose of her memoir. You know, in Hebrew and Christian traditions, they talk about something called an ethical will. And an ethical will is our responsibility to share with our progeny not just the lessons we've learned, but how we've learned those lessons, the mistakes that we've made, when we've fallen, what we've done when we've fallen. We have responsibility to teach our progeny.
Right.
In that regard.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. I love supervision mainly because it is an opportunity to teach and to talk, and it's go back into what I have learned from my mistakes, what I have learned from others. I really like listening to the story about this man's mentor, and like think about my mentors. And I remember so much about Al Friedman and how his wisdom was helpful.
Al Friedman was also one of the founders of the Family Institute, and he was also my mentor.
And, you know, he said a couple things that made my life so much easier. One was, if you really have a connection with somebody, they won't commit suicide. I'm not entirely sure that's true, but I sure do my damnedest to make sure that it doesn't happen. Cross my fingers, I haven't. But that, the importance of that connection and having somebody there for you. He was there for me, and I've been there for others.
Do you consider yourself a wise person?
I don't think of myself as wise. I think of myself as very pragmatic and doing the best that I can to take what I've been given and give it out as best as I can in that particular situation. But it's like one size doesn't fit all. And each situation is so different.
And that's what Elkanan Goldberg has been telling us about wisdom, that there's no one definition. Let me give out the phone numbers one more time. We're at 888-477-9499. Have you experienced wisdom in your life? If so, how and when and what happened that you consider it wisdom? 888-477-9499. Elkanan, in your book, The Wisdom Paradox, you emphasize art as exercise for the brain.
Correct.
So why is that? What does that do for the brain?
Well, listen, art is a mysterious attribute of, but also a universal attribute of every culture known to us. Yet the purpose of art and the societal value has been debated for decades, for centuries, without an obvious answer. Many art forms do not serve any practical purpose, or so it seems. So why does it inevitably exist in every culture? And I think that it serves the function for the brain, what athletic exercises, what exercise one's mind on various hypothetical situations, and this is why art has played such a central role in every culture.
Well, that answer that you've given and your comment about that in your book is kind of a setup here for Jerry Grossman. Your interest in art, when did all that begin, Jerry?
It began about 15 years ago.
You were a grown-up by then, 15
years. Very much a grown-up, an elder grown-up. I felt the need of something new. I also felt I was getting older, and I needed something in case I didn't continue my practice, which hasn't happened. And I've learned so much. It was like going back to kindergarten. Mm. And the curiosity that you feel was hard because I had to take a lot of criticism. And I was used to people listening to me, and suddenly I had to listen and be told I was wrong, which helped me to empathize with people as they come. And I have to help them look at some of the things that aren't just right. And I learned so much. I learned about building one piece on top of another, and how you do that in art, and how you let the history... I remember one teacher telling me, you have to let the history sneak through. So you see the background maybe of something you painted a little earlier, and it seeps through to the top of what you're doing now.
Wow.
And makes it so rich and deep.
Yeah, not such subtle metaphors. I think what I love listening to you when you talk about art is not just this richness that we've just heard, but what you're doing. Jerry, you're schlepping around the world taking workshops. Well, not around the world, but around the country.
Yes, and I've learned and I've met some wonderful, wonderful people. I'll name another one, Tim Hawksworth. He's fabulous. He's an Irish artist. He gives these talks from the beginning of a workshop, and they are wise. And what he does is he encourages everybody to look at the creativity within themselves. Mm. It's kind of looking what you're saying about looking at the wisdom in the baby and the wisdom in people. And I remember one time hating a picture I had done, and he said, you got to go back there and love that picture.
Mm.
And you know what? I was able to do it and change the picture.
Well, that reminds me of Carl Jung's famous quote, when he said, that which we hate represent parts of ourselves, that if we loved all parts of ourselves, we would hate nothing or no one.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Wouldn't that be wonderful? Same thing with art. I want to turn to you, Stephen Post. We got one of our callers asked about the relationship between wise people and grateful people. Is there a link? And that's kind of a softball for you, my friend.
Well, thanks, Dan. And to your caller, yeah, I think there is a link. You know, I really believe wisdom comes from experiences and being surprised oftentimes by difficulty and by the reality of human nature. You know, wherever I've had a leadership role, I run a division here in a medical school, but in my previous job, you know, I've been shocked sometimes at the complexity of human nature, and wisdom has come in realizing that complexity and being able to move forward in a way that's constructive, even with very difficult folks, and to remain grateful for the opportunity to have vision and the skill set to bring people along in ways that are good for them and good for my organization. So thankfulness is key. I think that love is central. I think persistence and perseverance, the idea that there is nothing that goes wrong, because at one point or another, most things will go wrong, but there's nothing that goes wrong that I can't learn from. And I can be grateful even for some of the harsher lessons of my life. And there have been a couple, and I think everybody, if they're honest, will acknowledge that. So to be grateful for the journey of life, Joseph Campbell, who was my teacher for a while, would say to be grateful for the journey, no matter what it brings.
I want to turn to you, Elkanon. You said in your book that as we age, the balance broadly shifts towards positive emotions. And I'm really interested in that because, you know, you also think of the, you know, old cranky people sitting on park benches complaining that not only is the world going to hell, but they're constipated on top of it all. So, I mean, you know who I'm talking about. So.
Yeah, and in fact, I made a more nuanced statement. I said that in those who acquire wisdom, there is a shift toward positive emotions. You are absolutely right. The world is full of those cranky, old, unfulfilled individuals who are constipated both gastrointestinally and mentally. Yeah.
It's so true. So what's the difference, I wonder? Jerry, you know, you have not been cranky since the day I met you. It's like not in your wiring. You've been through trauma. I've never seen you depressed. What's wrong with you?
I hate being depressed.
Yeah.
So I just don't let it last very long. I've found a lot of techniques that get me out of it. And I just can't stand it, so I get rid of it.
I mean, that's easier said than done. I mean, you can't
I turn to something else. I think about something else. I look at the light in the room. I look at my dog and go over to her and hug her.
Of course, that's great for someone who doesn't have a predisposition.
I think it is wiring. You know, I really do think perhaps. You know, my daughter says that she and I would both just really be able to play and pick shit and enjoy ourselves. Because
yeah.
I do think it is partly wiring, but partly is my running from it.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. We've got Teresa on the line. Teresa?
Hi, Dr. Dan. Evidently, I missed when you mentioned something about the Quran. I just wanted to speak as a Muslim American. Your assistant said you did mention it, and I was sorry that you didn't mention Muhammad when you mentioned Mother Teresa and Jesus and others. But I just wanted to say I get most of my guidance in terms of wisdom from the Quran, and I don't think because of so many political and economic things that are happening with Muslims around the world, we don't really see the teachings of Muhammad manifested in our behavior a lot of times. But he's actually called a mercy to mankind in the Quran, and that's kind of where I've gotten my wisdom. It's in compassion. I think that's the best way that it's manifested. And when I think about the people in my life who I consider wise, they all showed me so much mercy and compassion.
Well, that's really the heart of what I consider wisdom. And yeah, if I can get political here, I think, you know, so many of us have really lost the essence of religious teachings, and you know, we get all caught up in our own individual, often self-centered interpretations of it. So thank you so much for your call. Jerry?
Well, I also want to say that another thing is helpful of thinking about it is accept. It's wonderful to go for the compassion and the love, but you can't get there if you don't also accept the other parts of yourself.
What do you mean?
Well, you have to realize I get angry. I get jealous. I have to sit back with the jealousy and look at it and figure it out and get beyond it so that I can feel more compassionate. But I really do have to accept the negative parts of myself. And then I have to accept the negative. I have to shut my mouth when somebody's furious in my office and let them be furious for a while and not jump to love and compassion because they're not there yet. And they have to work through some of the anger and appreciate it before they can get there.
Well, even with ourselves, you know, the idea of self-compassion is we have to have compassion for all parts of ourselves.
Exactly.
You know, the person we are now, you know, neurotic and insecure and sometimes impulsive, I think I'm talking about myself a little bit too much at the moment, so we're going to end that. We're going to take a 60-second break, and we're going to come back and talk with these very wise people. Dr. Elkanan Goldberg is clinical professor of neurology at NYU, and he's written The Wisdom Paradox. Stephen Post is a professor of medicine at Stony Brook University, author of several books, including The Hidden Gifts of Helping. Geraldine Grossman is a psychologist here in Philadelphia area, dear friend of mine, a founding member of the Family Institute of Philadelphia. Our number, we'd love to hear from you about wisdom in your life and what it means to you. Our number is 888-477-9499. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Support for WHYY comes from Beck Institute, internationally recognized source for cognitive behavior therapy, welcoming clients to their Center for Psychotherapy in Bella Cynwyd. Established by Dr. Judith Beck and Dr. Aaron Beck, founder of cognitive behavior therapy, Beck Institute provides effective treatment for challenges including depression, anxiety, stress, and relationship problems. Details at beckinstitute.org or 610-664-3020.
Devereaux is a proud supporter of WHYY. For more than 100 years, Devereaux has provided care to individuals with developmental disabilities and mental and behavioral health disorders. Devereaux's work also includes its full continuum of autism-specific programming for individuals of all ages, including residential services, community-based group homes, employment training, and support and educational programs. For more information on Devereaux's autism-specific services, devereaux.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. We're talking about wisdom today with Geraldine Grossman, Stephen Post, and Elkanan Goldberg. Elkanan, I want to start with you here. You said in your book that our minds can be more powerful with curiosity, with various exercises you talk about in your book, but aren't you referring to our brains as opposed to our minds, or do you consider them both the same thing?
I'm one of those reductionists who consider them more or less the same thing. So really, I'm a neuroscientist, so the brain is what I study, and the brain is what I talk about and write about.
Jerry, would you consider our mind and our brain the same thing? I'm thinking of we had a show here, a couple of years ago, and the book title was called The Mind That Changes the Brain.
Right. Well, the brain I consider the physical, and the mind, I think, is the implementation. Well, the brain helps to implement the mind. And the mind and your thinking and your way of being, we found since we've learned about the plasticity of the brain, can change the brain. And that, I think, has been so wonderful.
Yeah.
That's changed my attitude so completely. I can remember a 50-year-old woman coming to me and saying, "Am I too old to be helped?" And at that time, I wasn't sure. Now I know she can be. And way older.
So let me turn to you quickly, Elkanan. Jerry just brought up the issue of brain plasticity, and she wandered into your domain. So when does the brain get less plastic? I mean, I'm looking at a woman across from me who's 15 years my senior, and boy, she's still learning an awful lot. That brain's still growing, it seems.
The challenge is not to force nuanced constructs into binary distinctions, whether the brain is plastic or is not plastic. It's a matter of degree. The brain remains somewhat plastic throughout the whole lifespan. What this notion, which was embraced almost axiomatically for many years, these plasticity resources basically run their course by the age of 3 or thereabouts, and from that point on, there were no plastic processes in the brain. But as we were learning more about how it concerned that certain classes of cells, like glial cells, continue to be replenished and recycled throughout the lifespan. Sometime relatively recently, about 3 decades ago, we began to learn that even the manufacturing of new neurons in the brain does not stop, as used to be thought, by the age of 3 or thereabouts, and continues to be ongoing through the lifespan.
So there's hope out there for old cockers like you and me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's certainly good news. Let's go to the phones. We've got Nora on the line. Hi, Nora.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Good, thanks. I just wanted to say that I think everyone has wisdom. And throughout my life, I find wisdom in every person that I come in contact with, almost every person that I come in contact with and I have some kind of intimate conversation with. I search for advice or just maybe somebody else's experience towards something that I don't have, and I squeeze that out of everyone, and I can say that I've learned something from almost every person that I've had some kind of, you know, relationship with or intimate conversation with.
Oh, I can hear in your voice, you sound like one of those happy people.
Well, I'm a sociology professor, so we tend to get passionate.
Really? Well, that's good for you, and I'm going to ask Stephen Post to comment on that. Thanks so much for your call, and thanks so much for sharing your wisdom here, Nora.
Oh, yeah, Nora, I think that everyone, with some rare exceptions, has a degree of wisdom, and a lot of what the spiritual traditions do is remind us of our wisdom with the use of aphorisms or small affirmations. If you look at all of the sacred scriptures, whether Buddhist or Jewish or Islamic, you get statements like, an attitude of gratitude brings blessings. These aren't big doctrines, they're not complicated, but they're things that you can say to yourself in the quiet of the morning as the day gets started, that you can reflect on and meditate on. In psychology, they call that priming. And it can affect your life over the course of the day, so you're not just reacting to the things around you, but you have more inner control and subjectivity. So wisdom traditions, wisdom literature is typically narrative, story that you can learn from, but also these brief snippets of wisdom. And, you know, one of the best people I knew on this point was Sir John Templeton, who wrote this wonderful book called The Laws of Life. And that's all it was brief pearls of wisdom with some explanation accompanying them. So wisdom, I think, is everyone's to have, but we need to prime it, and that's what these traditions of wisdom do. They help us to stay in touch with the things that we know as wise.
Thank you for that, Steve. Jerry, I want to turn to you. You know, I don't know about you, but when I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. So the whole concept of letting it be, is that a dimension of wisdom? It implies perspective and patience with, by the way, my apologies to Sir Paul for deconstructing his magnificent song.
I think that's one of the biggest questions I have, is when to push and not let it be, and when to just let it be. Like I think I said earlier on, when to just shut my mouth and keep quiet and just let things sink in. They're both important, because there's a time, I think, to act, and then there's a lot of time to just let it be.
Well, if the student can comment to the teacher, my answer is always let it be, because everything you can let be for the first few minutes or seconds, there are no emergencies in that regard, unless you're a cardiac surgeon or something. I hear somebody breathing on the other side. Is that you, Elkanon?
Nope. I'm breathing, but not out loud.
Oh. I want to, we've only got a minute left, and just one comment for you, Elkanon. Are we much more likely to be wise as we age? Does the brain lend itself to wisdom as we age?
Absolutely, to the extent that experience is a sine qua non of wisdom, is a necessary, not a sufficient, but a necessary prerequisite of wisdom, well, experience takes time to accumulate. So the short answer is yes. But that should not be overinterpreted as to mean that the aging confers wisdom as a matter of course. It does not. Most people, regrettably, age without becoming wise in any non-trivial sense. Yes, yeah. It is true that we all have some degree of wisdom, well, not to trivialize significant concepts.
Well, one thing I've learned is over the years is that it's not about the thing. We all have experiences as we age. It's never about the thing we experience. It's what that thing means to us, how we interpret it, where we put it in our life experiences, and our own tolerance for our own vulnerability. And if getting knocked down in life, and we all do, enables us to open our heart and open our mind and learn something about our own humanity, then we can learn something about others, and then we are likely to become wise as we age. So with that little sermon, I'm going to conclude the show, and I want to thank all of my guests so very much for joining us today and for sharing your wisdom. Elkanon Goldberg, Stephen Post, and Geraldine Grossman, thanks to all three of you. Next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to be talking about laughter. No, seriously, we're going to be talking about laughter. Well, to download our podcast, we're at whyy.org/voices. We're at Twitter at Voices in the Fam, and I am at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is our executive producer of audio content. Emily Haas is our production assistant. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Gita Simons is our producer. Thanks to all of you. Oh, I'm Dan Gottlieb. Hey, enjoy your week, my friends.